real pleasure to welcome back partner portfolio manager, founder of Corona Capital, single-year performance of over 2,000% as a money manager. Welcome back, John Scursey.
Thank you, Chris. It is a pleasure to be back.
We understand that one of your homes, some difficulty during Hurricane Irma. Can you tell us a little bit more about what happened and what's going on?
Went down there. I had closed up my house for the summer, which I typically do. We are talking about Tortola in the British Virgin Islands, which is maybe about 65 miles east of Puerto Rico. When I learned about what was actually coming into the area, that it was projected to be a Category 5 storm, and the path put the British Virgin Islands kind of dead center, I decided this wasn't going to be a normal hurricane, which I have experienced several normal hurricanes. And I realized, you know, no matter how I had left my home, it wasn't really, there were some vulnerable areas that were not ready for something like that. So I went down there, I got down there about a day before the storm hit, and I madly, zipped down everything I could think of and basically rode out the storm in a storage shelter. However, this thing was just, you know, nothing short of incredible in the sense that, in the aftermath, we learned it was actually a Category 7 hurricane when it hit the British Virgin Islands. The winds were clocked at 230 miles an hour, which had never, a wind speed of that sort had never been measured in the history of record keeping in the Northern Hemisphere. And I am not exaggerating when I say that the following day, I don't think there was a single plant on the island that still had a leaf attached to it. It was pretty devastating, and it took me 3 weeks to get off the island. The governor of the island pretty much said the right thing. He basically said on the radio, he said, you know, after this storm, all of us have lost something, and some of us have lost everything. And the one thing I would say, Chris, about that storm, one of the things I'm going to remember always, is that there were people on that island who I know lost everything, but were more than willing to help me out in whatever it is I needed.
Unbelievable what people can endure. It seems to bring out some of the better qualities in folks. And, you know, when a big storm comes here, our officials say, well, leave the coastal areas, vacate for a few days or a few weeks. And typically people can return, with maybe the exception of Hurricane Katrina. In an island like Puerto Rico and the British Islands, as you refer to, it's a life or death scenario. We're so happy to hear that you had the safe storm shelter and that you're rebuilding. Let's move on to potential financial storms. We know that you at Corona Capital, well, you outline your core strategies, your investment thesis, and you obviously believe in the soundness of solid money, okay, real assets such as the precious metals. Why don't you give us an idea of why you think this is an important investment leverage in a world where financial insurance is usually the last thing, for some reason, investors are encouraged to consider when constructing an investment portfolio?
It's interesting because, you know, bringing up that whole storm scenario, you know, there's an interesting analogy, Chris, with, you know, with that whole topic, in the sense that we are maybe at the very beginning of a financial storm. What do you do to prepare for it? And I think the first thing is to recognize the nature of the system that we are in. And a lot of people just take a lot of things for granted. They take their financial system for granted. They take their money for granted. And of course, none of these things live in any kind of a static state. Everything is in a dynamic state, and maybe you could say that things change slowly, and they usually normally do. You know, things may take a lifetime to really change in any kind of dramatic fashion, and on a day-to-day pace, you barely notice it. But I think it's safe to say that our financial system is one which is debt-based, and it only grows by growing the amount of debt. And there are certain key points in time, in our historic, you know, time on the financial scale, one of the key ones being 1971, which is when our money became detached from a real asset, which was gold, which was essentially the collateral behind our money. And what happened after that date was that by being unencumbered by any kind of a real asset, the path was clear to encumber that money with an unlimited amount of debt. So if you want to, in very simplistic terms, think that we were relatively debt-free in 1971, or virtually debt-free, we grew our level of debt somewhere in the category of infinity over the following, you know, 50 years, let's say.
You talk about in the category of infinity, and I just want to emphasize this because I feel that so many pundits, analysts, and economists miss this salient point. Maybe outline and underscore the importance of the enormity, this money situation.
One reason I use that word infinity is to give people an idea of the scale of this number, because people throw out the word billions and trillions almost casually, and I will often in a printed article, I will see journalists mistakenly put billion when they meant trillion. That's how interchangeable those numbers seem to be, because they're really far from our own daily life mental concept. But here is something that might bring that concept home, which is why I prefer to use the number or the concept of infinity, which is the following. If somebody sat at a street corner and his or her sole job was to hand out dollar bills, giving out one every second, how long would it be before you gave away $1 trillion? So if you ask a group of people, like a group of school-age children, that story, it's a math question, of course. And you assume that, you know, that human being doesn't have a normal life. They live forever, and they don't do anything. They don't eat or sleep. They just sit there at the corner handing out dollar bills. Well, the correct answer is it would take 30,000 years.
You make such a great point, and the way we try to illustrate it, you know, I have two little ones here, a six-year-old, a one-year-old. You know that you have to illustrate things when they're young in very simplistic terms. But, you know, you have to paint with a broad brush and very carefully craft it. And $1 trillion is 1 million stacks of $1 million. That's how much these numbers start to add up. And now we're using quadrillion to describe the notional derivatives value. We're approaching, I think, $1 to $2 quadrillion. So we're talking about $1,000 trillion.
Another, which I think is also important, which is, Chris, the word simplicity. Obviously, if you're addressing, you know, a child or a young person, you know, you need to boil something down in simplistic terms. But I think, you know, in the investment sphere, something that is sensible or worthy or explainable as an investment theme needs to hold water in the most simple of terms. So in other words, you know, any of these broad concepts, they should be understandable to somebody in their most simplest terms. So my problem, you know, with the debt scenario is I have various problems, but one of them is I believe that you should be able to take out a plain piece of paper and give it to someone, give it to an expert, and say, you know, on this plain piece of paper, can you show me using, you know, eighth or ninth grade math, how we are going to pay this debt off? Simple as that. Yet one person smarter than me, and there's lots of people who are a lot smarter than I am, able to do that.
That's a very interesting analogy you bring up, that something so seemingly simple might be such an incredible challenge. It does appear that we've sort of reached that road of no return. We've had, I'm sure you're familiar with the work of Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff at Boston University. He believes we're in excess of $240 trillion now. If you bring in all of the government programs and the future costs associated with funding them, well, doing back of the envelope math, 10 to 20 fold our annual gross domestic product just to pay it off. So, of course, who could sustain and pay off such a debt? The solution then, it will have to be individual accountability, preparation for the inevitable cyclone, financial and economic storm ahead. I know that you're a value investor in your core strategies at Corona Capital. Can you give us an idea of the importance of value investing and any other strategies that you feel are debt-related strategies?
Map out where we are on the timeline and bringing it to the present, you know, we've got a number of things going on that I think are really rather exciting because it indicates we are very close to that end game. And this is what I would, you know, urge people, impress upon people in terms of thinking about. When you have a debt-based system such as ours, what it literally means, Chris, is that every single piece of debt that's out there is someone else's asset. That's a very important concept that I think people have to think about. And it goes a long way into explaining why we are where we are. In other words, we have expanded our global economies by expanding debt. We have shuffled that debt from one pocket to another pocket, but each time the pockets get bulgier and bulgier. So the problem is, where and how can you keep growing this debt when there's no way of even pretending you can ever pay it back? The problem becomes, what does that then mean to the assets which are sitting in everybody's investment portfolio or every bank's balance sheet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And the implications of that conundrum are enormous in the sense that it not only threatens the entire financial system, it of course threatens the integrity of the very thing we use as our money. Because the only way to solve the debt problem is literally either default on it or deflate it away. Now, the default option does not work because of the problem I stated earlier, which is it is an asset that is embedded in the system. So if you kill that asset in a large enough form, it basically destroys the entire system. If you remember back going now almost a decade, it's hard to believe, almost a decade ago was when Greece became a real problem. And the Greek people and the Greek government basically threw up their hands and said, we give up, we are broke, and, you know, we want to default on our debt. They actually had a referendum where the people voted to default on their debt. But of course, their debt masters, who happen to be the most powerful countries in Europe, which is dominated by Germany, said, no way. And what they literally ended up doing was force feeding them a new line of credit, which they then took back in the form of the interest arrears that was owed to them. And then, you know, we just went merrily on our way. But it basically proves that debt is not an option. So what is that other option? The other option is debasing our currency as a way of basically alleviating the debt. And therefore, we as investors have some very interesting choices to make, because in this debt boom of, you know, 50 years that started in 1971, one of the other key things that took place was that more or less on a steady basis, the 1970s being the exception, we had our first and only bout of inflation during the 1970s, but from more or less 1980 on, we went downhill in terms of interest rates, and we went all the way down to zero, and now we are plumbing the new territory of negative interest rates. The reason is pretty clear. When you load yourself up with debt, one way of pretending you can pay that debt is to have interest rates at zero. I mean, you and I, Chris, we could carry $1 billion of debt personally on our own balance sheets if our interest rate was zero and we got to just roll it over every time it came due, which is, by the way, exactly what all of these countries do. So I'll make another statement, which is that the United States has never paid any debt back. Ever. What I mean is that balance sheet has always grown. So it's like every time one credit card payment is due, you get another credit card and you keep growing your balance. There's a point where it just doesn't work. And I think we are at that point. Those moves that the Fed did about now 6 months ago, which is a complete 180 from what they said they were going to do, which is we're going to raise rates and we're going to shrink our balance sheet. Well, that came to an early end because there was just a little breeze of a recessionary force that went into the economy. And that was enough to just stop the central banks in their tracks before we could even raise rates barely past 2%. So here we are now in the middle of a global trade war. Here we are now feeling the beginnings of a global recession, and we are already starting to lower rates. But the question is, what is going to happen when that next inevitable recession hits in earnest and threatens to take down some part of somebody's debt structure? When you are already at a point where you've got very low rates, and the issue of lowering them or even bringing them into negative category brings all sorts of corollary damage. It's almost like giving a patient with cancer, chemo. You have to remember that chemo is actually a poison.
We'll stay in touch via Julian and make sure you can get us updated.
I am already looking forward to that, and all the very best to you, Chris, and thank you again.
All right. Have a good day.
You as well. Thank you, Chris.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver medals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals distributed ledger and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Shopping for fine jewelry just got easier. GoldSeek.com has identified the most successful jewelry brand to launch in recent times. Many Jewelry is rewriting the way consumers buy fine jewelry. Integrity Craftsmanship, the only company to sell 24-karat gold and platinum jewelry, avoiding confusing alloys and gems, a true precious metals investment. Many Jewelry's disruptive business model embraces Franco-American craftsmanship and direct-to-consumer economics, rapidly disrupting the $20 billion monopoly, just like Amazon and Uber. The sky is the limit with $1 billion of jewelry purchases daily for loved ones and those special occasions. Many Jewelry is an innovator positioned to capture market share, with annual sales growth in the industry topping $30 billion by 2021. Many Jewelry coined the term investment jewelry, pricing by the gram, transparently disclosing its profit margins, a truer investment in pure gold or platinum. Similar to real estate, even artwork, Many Jewelry has a weighted value easily calculated, ensuring value wealth as a long-term investment. With sales in 60 countries around the globe, 20,000 orders already, don't miss out on the explosive growth potential. Many Jewelry trades under the symbols MENE on the Toronto Exchange and in the US MENEF. Remember to sign up to Many's Shareholder Club to receive shareholder news, updates, and special discount codes for jewelry purchases. Remember, Many Jewelry.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.